Okay, it's Tuesday morning, it's 9 o'clock. You made it to day two of the SharePoint conference. Well done. We'll give just a couple more minutes for people to kind of wander in. It's always tough, the first session of the day. But I'm really pleased you chose to come here instead of the OneDrive session that my marketing rep is actually doing. This is going to be a way better session. Thank you. No! We're going to lock it. We're going to bolt the doors. You can't get out. It's a compliance session. You're staying. See, the problem is if we put you on records hold, we lock you in place. If we put you in on in-place hold, we'll just make a copy of you and leave you and your ghost can walk away. Okie dokie, the doors are starting to close. That's it, you're trapped in here now. So, welcome to the overview of compliance in SharePoint and Office 365. We've renamed the session about four times because we couldn't figure out what to call it. But effectively, what we're going to cover today is a lot of the compliance features we have in SharePoint. But because the team that I'm with is the information protection team, we actually look at compliance features across the Office 365 suite. When I say the Office 365 suite, I'm talking about all the Office servers as well. We're not ignoring any of the on-premises servers. So my name is Astrid McLean. I've been with Microsoft for about 13 years. I started off back in Australia in Microsoft Consulting, helping to deploy a lot of the Office servers. Spent a bit of time in the technical marketing group, and now I'm program manager in the information protection team looking at compliance features across SharePoint and, in fact, across all of our Office 365 and Office Server products. If you were at Bill Bayer's IT Pro keynote, you would have heard that we haven't forgotten about the on-prem products. We are releasing another version of the on-prem products in 2015. In this presentation, you'll see a range of features that are in the current products. I'll also talk about a few things that are coming. So the things that we're going to be releasing that are new, you saw a few of them in the keynote that Michal did that looked at e-discovery and auditing. I'll cover those things here as well as the Compliance Center. We will be releasing those first in Office 365 because that's our cadence. We put it out in 365 because that's where we can get it out there, but we have plans to bring those into the on-premises products as well for the next release. And we've got lots of demos. It's not just presentation. So we will keep you awake, giving it some morning session, and we'll break up the slides with the presentations as well, with demos. Oh, and it's not just me. Quentin Christensen is going to join me in a little bit. There's Quentin down the front. For those that don't know Quentin, he's our e-discovery guru. What were some of the other titles you gave me?
The King of Compliance.
So there you go. So Quentin will be joining us to talk about e-discovery. And of course, he has a session after this one that's going to deep dive into e-discovery. So if you like what he says in this one, go to his next session. Right. Why do we even do compliance? Why is it interesting to us? Why is it interesting to you? So everybody has data in the organization and it goes through a standard life cycle. So you create stuff, you collaborate on it, you can store it. Eventually, you might even dispose of it. But there are a number of things that happen within organizations that drive them to say, hey, we need to apply some sort of compliance tools to the data we've got in our organization. And that can be a number of things. The obvious one is like the lawyer we have in the front row is a lawyer will come to you and say, hey, you need to preserve this data, you need to discover this data, somebody's suing you. So there is requirements for preservation and for discovery. You may have regulatory requirements. So if you're in the financial industry or if you're in the healthcare industry and a bunch of other industries, there seems to be a new regulation coming out every week, practically, it feels like sometimes. And a lot of those regulations have requirements for preserving data, for disposing of data, for encrypting data. If you're going to send healthcare information out, you need to encrypt it. They have requirements around data loss, so you can't send personal information outside your organization. You may have requirements within your own organization itself. You have a set of requirements that say you need to dispose of certain documents within a certain amount of time, you need to keep different documents. And then there's the threat model. So what happens when something happens into your organization and you need to find out what happens? So there's things like auditing. archiving, discovery, encryption, DLP, preservation, and delete. And in this session, we're going to talk about all of those. So we're not going to go into a huge amount of depth, but I will demo all of those. We will show you those. It's not only going to be those features in SharePoint. I will also show you some of those features in Exchange, not because I don't love SharePoint dearly, because I do, but because all of these features, we're trying to build these features across our suite of products, and some of the examples I can give you, I can show you in Exchange, and I can show you how that either translates into SharePoint today or how it will translate into SharePoint in the future. So that's why we're all here. But here's our vision. There are a couple of problems. In fact, I'll go back one slide. I forgot to talk about something. There are a few problems with how a lot of companies do compliance today. So a lot of organizations will take their data and they'll move it to a compliance archive and then they apply the compliance on top of that compliance archive. Great idea, you spend a lot of money, you duplicate your storage, you have to manage two systems, and then you're poor users. Instead of just having their email in Outlook, now they need an add-on to go find their email in another archive. If they're in SharePoint, they need an add-on to go and find their data of somebody else. So every time you duplicate it, and I'm seeing a few nodding heads that say, oh, yeah, we do that too. It's expensive, it's tough for the administrator, it's tough for the user. So Microsoft has a vision of doing things differently. And these are effectively our tenets of how we want to do compliance. So the first one is around empowering the user. Now, empowering the user is about allowing them to do what they need to do, not getting in their way, but allowing them to be compliant with whatever regulations your organization needs. So it's about getting them to do things like, hey, I'm going to continue to send that email. I'm going to remind you that you might be hitting a compliance blocker. I'm going to stop you if I really need to, but if you need to override that, I'm going to give you that option. It's about giving them retention policies that as an administrator, you give them options. The site administrator that knows what the data is in their organisation or knows what the data is in their site can make a choice as to the right retention policy to put in. So it's about making sure that the end user has some control within the guidelines that your compliance officer or your organisation puts in place. But we also want to enable the compliance officer. So for small organisations, the compliance officer, the IT admin, it's all one person. For larger organisations, you'll have an IT admin, a compliance officer, you'll have legal people, you can have all sorts of people. And one of the things that Michal mentioned in the keynote is we want to be able to give tools to the compliance officers or the people that play that role without necessarily having to bug IT. We want to allow them to do their job. We want to be able to delegate that administration to them so they can go and do what they do and the IT guys can continue to do everything else instead of saying, what, you need me to do that discovery for you again? Really, I have to set that up for you? So we'll talk about some tools to help with that. And we want to make it easy for IT. We don't want you to have to manage two systems. We don't want you to have to manage two ways of doing things. So we want to make it cheaper for IT. We want to make it easier to manage. And underpinning all of that is what we call our in-place story, in-place and extensible. And that's all about making sure that the data stays where it lives in its native environment. And we'll talk about some of the tools we have to do that. But it's having the data in place. It means you have a single store. It means you have a single place to manage it. But we have an extensibility story because we can't manage necessarily everything. So we'll talk about some of the areas where, you know, we might do different things, like index different systems because we can't, you know, bring the data themselves into our own system. So they're effectively the tenants. And as I talk about the compliance features, you'll hear me talk about where they fall into some of those top buckets. But that in-place story, it's kind of different. It's different to the way other people work things. So I'm going to dive into that a little bit more. So you see the top left, sort of, right? Left. It is left, isn't it? That's the traditional compliance stuff. The stuff on the right is what we want to do. So instead of moving your data out of Exchange, you leave it in Exchange. If you need to make it immutable, you can preserve that data in place. If you need to make the data in SharePoint immutable, you can leave the data in place. And why is that a really good idea? Because the data stays in context. You don't lose any of the metadata around it. You don't lose any of the context around it. An email stays in the folder it's in or in the context. A document stays with the metadata that it's got. And we make those stores immutable, which means that legally, that data can't be changed. And so we can still put it within the application itself, but we can make it so the admins can't touch it, they can't move it, they can't delete it, and from an e-discovery point of view, you can still find it. And for some of the systems that we either don't have control of or don't have their own store, take Link, for example. When you have a meeting, when you have conversations, that's transient data. They don't have a long-term storage system for it. So we bring that Link data into Exchange and use the immutable store in Exchange to be able to store that data. For other third-party archives or, you know, things like Bloomberg data, because that's a big ask that we get, we need to decide whether we're going to do one of two things, either ingest that data into one of the stores we manage or simply index the data so you can actually find it where it is. And so we don't move data around, we leave it where it is. We also want to build our compliance into the applications themselves, which helps with that. I talked about the indexing or ingesting. And it allows us to unify the compliance experience and unify that configuration across the Office 365 suite, across all of the Office servers. So how many people actually saw the Unified Compliance Center in the keynote on Monday? Oh, a few of you did. Oh, for those that didn't, you're in for a treat. You get to see it all over again. So here's one of the first new features we're going to announce. This is the new Compliance Center. This is a central console for managing all your compliance needs in one place. You're able to delegate administration of this to, like I said, the compliance officers, the legal people, whoever needs access to this, and they can get to all of their compliance needs in one place. And I promised you that I'd do some demos. So rather than just tell you about it, switch over here. And ta-da, look, here's a compliance center that's new. So I will warn you, we did check in the last fix for this code on Thursday, which was like a few days ago. So it is working. This is a very similar environment to actually what we used in the keynote. This is what we call our dog food environment. So this is when we first release code, we put it into our dog food environment, then it gets shifted to MSIT and they do some more testing for it, and then we put it out into production. So this isn't ready to be released yet, but this is very close, and it will be released in the next few months. So I'm going to just take you on a quick tour of what we have. Some of the compliance features we talked about, things like data loss prevention. Down here you can see this is all the information about the data loss prevention policies that I have in Exchange. It's all surfaced in the one console. And I'll talk about DLP a little bit later, so I won't deep dive into that yet. When I look at archiving, and I switch to the right tab. Archiving and deletion. So we think about archiving as being a suite of features. There's archiving where you move the data to an archive. We have deletion policies, which some of you will know as retention policies, and we'll talk about that a little bit later. And then we've got hold as well, which is our preservation feature. For auditing, this is one of the places that Michal showed in her demo. We have auditing for mailboxes. We also have auditing for the site collections down the bottom. Now, how many people are thrilled with the way that you get to audit settings in a site collection in Exchange, in SharePoint today? What? A single person? Really? You don't want to do 8 clicks in order to get to the audit settings? So here we've taken a look. We can surface all of your site collections. And in the final version, we will have filtering and searching capabilities so you're not having to search through 100,000 site collections. And you can actually go directly to the audit settings within a particular site. I get a site that actually works. Look at that. Go straight to the audit settings within the site. Yes, feel free to clap, cheer, all that sort of stuff. All right. So that's where, and I'll explain some of the new audit settings. I will actually switch to the keynote environment to show you those. This is a link to the eDiscovery Center. So at the last SharePoint conference, there was a lot of discussion about the new eDiscovery Center in SharePoint. It's an awesome feature. There was just one little tiny gap with it. In order to get it, you had to know that you had to create a site collection and you had to know the template and the IT person had to do it, and then you had to give the URL to the compliance officer, and a few nodding heads, and it was a little bit hard to find. But the functionality was awesome. So here we've just surfaced that. If you don't have an eDiscovery Center, you can click on this, it will create it for you. You no longer have to have your legal officers and your compliance officers know what the URL is. They can come here, they can click on it. We surface the cases and you can go directly to the eDiscovery Center. And from an encryption point of view, here's another one where the encryption settings for SharePoint are buried 6 levels down in the site settings somewhere. And here we've done the same thing. We've surfaced the document libraries and we will have searching and filtering and those sort of things. So if I go to one of my document libraries, happens to be my team site, and I can edit those, and look at this, we get a nice pretty view of what the IRM settings are in your document library. We can update them, and as soon as you hit save, it'll send them directly down to SharePoint. So we're trying to make it very easy to be able to do these things. So does that look as if it's going to be helpful to people? Yes? Something? Yeah? Sorry? Yeah, I'll come back to the auditing because I'm specifically going to do an auditing demo. Is that all right? Okay. Trust me, we'll come back. Every demo launches from the Compliance Centre. So you're going to get to see a lot of that today. So, that was proof that it was going to do a demo. So let's talk about some of these features, and I'm going to talk about every one of these features. Yay! So, storing data. Exchange has an in-place archive, and it's a second mailbox, which is sits beside your primary mailbox. You're able to see it in line in Outlook. You're able to see it in OWA. You can drag and drop messages to it. Fits the whole in-place paradigm very well. SharePoint has the Record Center. That's effectively what our archive is. Now, I'm not going to deep dive into the Record Center itself because there are two fabulous presentations this afternoon. So one where they're talking about how MSIT manages large records management stuff. There's also, I think it's a General Motors. Is it General Motors? Yes. Thank you. Yes, there's a General Motors session later on this afternoon that talks about how they do records management as well. But that's effectively what the archiving story is in SharePoint. So this is all about keeping data together. And as I said, the archiving term can be used to do different things. So in this place, we're talking about doing in-place archive and storing data somewhere else. But there are other aspects to archiving as well. Deletion policies, or what most people know as retention policies. Compliance is full of interesting terms. What's retention? It's all about when you need to delete something. So we've started to call these things deletion policies because that's what they actually are. So Exchange has a set of deletion policies, which if you look really carefully says retention tags, because we still call them retention policies. So that's what we have in Exchange. And in SharePoint, this is something you won't have seen before. So SharePoint currently has content type policies that allow you to do document retention. But what it doesn't have is general purpose document deletion policies that allow you to do things like, hey, I've got all this data sitting out in OneDrive for business. What I really want to do is that's not business critical information. That's stuff that people are working on. And you could keep it forever. But hey, that can introduce some interesting risks to your organisation. So I was talking to one of our technical writers in the team. He had a job a long time ago when he first started out. He was a legal assistant. And he was a legal assistant to a tobacco company, back when they used to say, hey, we're going to sue you for stuff you did. So he went out to a warehouse where they were storing all their records. And back before electronic records, that meant a warehouse of real records, like real paper data. And he said, this thing went on for miles. There was just so much data. There were documents back to the 40s where people had said things which weren't necessarily a good thing when someone's trying to sue you. So keeping data forever, not necessarily the best thing in the world. And from a risk perspective, making sure that you only have up-to-date data in your organisation can be a very good thing. And so these document deletion policies is a new feature we're introducing that's coming out in the next few months. Again, it starts off in Office 365 and SharePoint Online. It will come to the on-premises version when we get to the next version. And I have a deep dive on that session, what's new in retention, tomorrow at 10:45. But I will show you a demo of it in a minute, and I'll show you what those look like as well. And then the last piece of what we call the archiving story is preservation. Now, let's talk about hold in SharePoint. As soon as I say hold, people say, oh, yes, I know what that is. That's the thing you introduced in SharePoint 2007, and I put something on hold, and it's an individual document, and it gets a lock on it, and nobody can edit it, and nobody can delete it, and that's not what we're talking about. So that was effectively a record management hold. In the last version of SharePoint, SharePoint 2013, we introduced in-place hold. And this is the kind of matching feature, because I talked about features that sit across our suite. It's a matching feature to what we have in Exchange, where when I put a site on in-place hold, it means that anything that is deleted from that site gets stored in what we call a preservation hold library. The first time you edit something in the site, we take the original version and we put it in the preservation hold library. And in terms of empowering the end user, we don't stop the end user from doing what they need to do. They continue to work, they delete documents, they edit them, they do what they need to do. But from a preservation point of view, we take that information and we store it in a secure location. The admin can't delete it. The admin can't delete the library it's in. The admin can't delete the site collection while it's on hold. And from an e-discovery point of view, we can then discover both the things that are in the preservation hold library because they've been deleted or edited, as well as the documents that are in the library itself. So our in-place strategy plays in there to say we can find everything you needed to preserve as well as everything that's in the document library itself. And from the new thing that we've introduced that, again, will come out in a couple of months with the new compliance centre, is up to now the only way you could put things on hold in or an in-place hold in SharePoint was through the e-discovery centre. It was either on hold or it wasn't. What you couldn't do, which is something we could do in Exchange, is say, I want to hold the documents in the site for a period of time. And by that I meant, hey, I want to hold every document for 7 years from the last modified date, or 7 years from the date the document was created. Because you might have a requirement that says, hey, all financial documents need to be kept, or all recruitment documents in HR need to be kept for a fixed period of time from the time they were created. It's what we call a time-based hold. And we've introduced that feature in SharePoint, and then I'll talk about at the end how we've kind of brought those two hold policies together so you can actually start to set hold policies across all of the data in your organisation. But I've been talking for too long, which means it's time for a demo. All right. I'm going to go up to the archiving section, not surprisingly. Actually, I'm going to start with the user interface first. Let me take you to OWA. And there's two things I want to show you. How many people actually know about, look, I'm going to use the brilliant Zoom feature so you can see what I'm doing. How many people have used the in-place archive in Exchange? That's not surprising, given that it's mostly a SharePoint conference. But so it looks and feels like another folder, so that's what our kind of in-place story does. But what I wanted to show you here is something that's relatively unique to Exchange that SharePoint doesn't have yet. And it's the ability to assign retention policies that users can select from. So you can say, hey, here's my retention policy for this mailbox. These are the particular retention tags or deletion rules that I'm going to allow my user to have. I'm going to set some defaults, but the user knows best what the data needs to, what needs to happen to the data. They can't do anything. They can only select from what the admin gives them. But it gives the end user the power to be able to control at least some of those retention settings. And that's about empowering the end user. And so when we go back to the administration side of things, we've made it very easy through the compliance centre to say, hey, I want to manage the archive mailboxes in my organisation. I've got the little mice spinning in the background, which just takes a little while, so I can easily set things up. And here under my delete policies, which are those retention things I talked about, one of the things I can do is I can very easily, from my mailbox, I can take my mailbox, I can edit it, and I can say, hey, I want a different retention policy or a delete policy that applies to that particular mailbox. And I can see all of the retention rules that are available. So that's what it is in Exchange. Oops. Try and hit the right buttons. Close that out. These are the new document deletion policies. This is the Document Deletion Policy Center. And something that's unique about this that you don't often see in SharePoint is these are centrally managed. This is not managed within a site collection. This is managed in one place. So you set up your deletion policies for your organization in one place. And so when I go to my manage my delete policies, made it easy. We've given you two samples, so you don't have to start from scratch. So apparently I didn't click that. It's thinking about it. Mice running in the background. And I'll show you what these rules look like. So you will notice that these are not your standard content type rules which allow you to do 1,000 things and allow you to do 1,000 workflows. You can only do two things with delete policies. You can either delete through the recycle bin or you can permanently delete them. And as I said, these are meant to be broad-based deletion policies and they only affect documents. So they're not going to go off and delete kind of images, and they're not going to go off and delete wikis, because typically when you're doing these policies, they're meant to be attached to things like OneDrive for Business. And how do you attach them? Because right now, if you try to do something against a site collection, it's really hard, and you've got to do a per site collection, that's a real pain. So what we allow you to do is we allow you to assign these assign these policies to a template. So if I go and assign a policy, I can actually assign it to the SkyDrive Pro template, so the My Site template, so that every SkyDrive Pro site collection, existing or new, gets this set of policies. So it's a very centrally managed system. So that's retention. And then from a preservation point of view, I can go into my hold policies. And I can see here I can manage in-place hold on mailboxes. I can manage in-place hold on sites. And when it comes up, I have an in-place hold policy center. And for those of you that have seen the eDiscovery Center, looks a little bit similar. We did base it on it. It is a separate site collection, but you'll notice I didn't have to go and find a site collection and create it and find the URL. I can just click on it from the Compliance Center. And similar to the other policies, I can create an in-place hold policy. Here I'm doing it for recruitment documents. I can add and manage my sources, which means that I can apply the policy to more than one site. If I apply it to a higher level site, it will cascade down. I have the full power of my eDiscovery engine, so I can put things on hold with a query. So what this will do is only hold documents that meet my particular query. And so that's a full KQL query. So you can get quite sophisticated in what types of documents you want to hold. And the difference with the eDiscovery hold, because it uses the same mechanism underneath, is here I can set a time period where I can say hold an item relative to the created date, relative to the last modified date, and I can decide how long I want to hold it for. So they're the time-based, that's the time-based hold feature in SharePoint. Okay, so that's the whirlwind of archive, delete, and hold. That's where I get to take a break. Okay, helpful so far? Nodding your heads, good.
Just to clarify.
Certainly. So the thing that is not available, I'm still on that screen. The thing that's not available is this in-place holds for site on a time basis. So the ability to place things on hold is there in the eDiscovery Center today. The ability to place it on hold for a period of time from when the document was created is the thing that's new. And so that will be coming the next version of SharePoint, but it will be coming to SharePoint Online in the next few months. Okay? But everything else, and the document deletion policies are the same. So those new document deletion policies are coming to SharePoint Online soon, won't be in the next version. It will be in the next version of SharePoint, it's not in the current one. But the Record Center is certainly there, and the stuff I showed you in Exchange is in the current versions. Okay? Yes? It's exactly the same. It's exactly the same process as sending it to the recycle bin in SharePoint. So we're not doing anything special there. Yes? So right now, we're looking for feedback on what you want to have happen. Because we're delivering this in SharePoint Online first, you manage it at a tenant level. We expect to have it so that you can manage it per farm, but this is one of the things, given that we're delivering it into Office 365 first, we have time to get feedback from you. So if you have a particular way you'd like to see that work, we encourage the feedback to let us know that. Okay? Oh, I'm sorry. The question that was asked was what level of control will the document deletion policies be, whether they're at a farm level, whether you can do it hybrid, whether you can do it cross-farm. The question about when things are going to be available was what's available in the current release versus what's coming. And I can't remember what the third question was. All right, I will remember to do it. Thank you. Okay, moving on with our compliance features. Encryption. Why would I even want to encrypt something? Oh, I don't know, you might get an email like I happened to get late on Saturday night that said, hey, you're going to be backstage at the keynote on Monday. Bill Clinton's going to be there. If you want to be on backstage, you need to be on the Secret Service list, and thank you very much, I'll need your social security number and your date of birth. I was like, oh, sounds a little like a phishing attack. What they actually asked me to do was send an encrypted email with that data. So there are times when you need to encrypt the data because it's sensitive. And so IRM, or Information Rights Management, powered by Rights Management Service, we can never decide whether to call it IRM or RMS, so we tend to put in both, is about preventing sensitive information from basically either being printed, forwarded, or copied to unauthorised people. And so that's things like I might have an internal company memo that I want to make sure is protected. And there are RMS features available in SharePoint as well as Exchange. In SharePoint, you can turn it on for a document library, so you can set the settings. In Exchange, you can set it per you can set it up for emails that travel through the system as well. But it's all about attaching usage rights to a particular email as well as encrypting that data. And so that works with the document as well as with email, wherever the document moves. But we do have two specific encryption technologies for Exchange as well for email. So one is S/MIME, when I want to send something typically to someone in my organisation because we need to exchange certificates. And a good example of that is sending that PII information to the events manager that happens to work for Microsoft and sending my data. It's encrypted, life is good. And then we've just introduced Office 365 message encryption. What if I want to send an encrypted mail to someone outside my organisation? I don't want to have to exchange certificates and those sort of things. Office 365 message encryption lets me send an encrypted message to any email address. Doesn't have to be known to me. As soon as it gets to that person, they get an encrypted message. They have to go to a web portal. They have to sign in with their email address. We verify it's the right person. They can open the encrypted message. So there's a few encryption features. But how do I know what it is that I want to encrypt? Most of the time, I don't want to encrypt everything. I just want to encrypt things that I know are sensitive. And that's where our data loss prevention features come in. So data loss prevention helps you identify, monitor, and protect sensitive data through deep content analysis. What the heck does that mean? It means that you need to identify the data in a very clever way. You want to monitor what happens in your system so you know what's happening with the sensitive data as it moves through your system. You may need to protect it, and protecting it may be encrypting it, it may be blocking it, it may be stopping you from sharing it with somebody. And the end user education piece, this is all about the fact that we call this data loss prevention. Most users want to do the right thing. Most of the time, they don't know what that is. How many people know exactly what all of the right regulations are that they need to follow in their own organisation? How many people even know where to find that list? Yeah, a few. Are you typically the ones that wrote it? So this is the idea here is that if you can tell users at the time they're doing something, whether they're meeting a regulation or not, you're helping to educate the end users. For the poor people that wrote all those regulations that are gathering dust in the corner on the website that nobody read, it's a bonus for them because suddenly you can start to redirect them to the regulations at the time they're doing something. It becomes really relevant data. And our first foray into data loss prevention, we introduced into Exchange in the last version. So what I'd like to do is I want to show you what this looks like in Exchange, and I promise you I will show you what that means in SharePoint. And I'll get down to what those classifications meant that Michal showed in the keynote as well. So bear with me as I swap over to Exchange again. So I'm going to go back to my mail. And, you know, this is one of these things where here's an email I created earlier. All right. So I'm going to save that just to make sure the server has a good look at it, can evaluate it. I'm just about to send my credit card, you know, information to some external person. Fabricam is my favourite external company. That looks a lot like a credit card number, doesn't it? 16-digit number, it should be a credit card. Turns out it's not. And this is what we mean by deep content analysis. If I was doing just kind of a quick look, any 16-digit number could be a credit card. But they're not. Credit cards have a certain format. And there's a special algorithm that if you run them through called Lund's algorithm that proves it's a real credit card number, not just any 16-digit number. And the system recognises that that's not a real credit card number, so it's not worried about it. But what happens when I change it to a real number? And this is a demo, so I happen to know what my favourite Visa sample number is. I put a 4 in front of it. We pray to the demo gods. Boo! There we go. Look at that. Suddenly, change of a digit says, oh, hang on, this message appears to contain sensitive information. Are you sure you really want to send this? So, and that's a single credit card. So we have rules in place that say, okay, I can identify what's a real credit card. I'm going to look for things like, hey, you've got Visa next to it, which is going to increase my confidence that this is actually a credit card. So it's about looking at the data itself, doing some analysis on it, and then looking at what we call corroborating evidence as well to see how confident I am that this is actually a credit card. And then putting rules in place to say, what am I going to do about it? And in this case, sending one credit card out, that's probably not a great drama. I'm probably really sending my credit card to the travel agency and nobody really cares. So it's going to warn me, it's going to give me some user education, but it's not going to stop me. But what I'm going to do is I'm going to attach two documents. So, oops, just two, maybe. And as it attaches those, it's going to think about it for a little bit. Oh, something just happened. So my policy just changed. It says this message can't be sent. And why did it change? Well, I added two things, and one of them has been highlighted. So it's intelligent enough to go and not only read the email, but read the attachments in the email. And that attachment happens to have about 15 credit card numbers in it. Now, if I'm sending one, that's not a problem. But 15? Really? I think you're trying to leak some information. And typically, users will do this inadvertently. They don't really want to send PII information out. They don't really want to send credit card data out. If they really wanted to be malicious, quite frankly, they'd find a different way to do it. But they will accidentally do it, and no organisation wants to be that headline in the news that says, employee accidentally sends out social security numbers to name your favourite reporter. So this is a way of helping the user, giving them the good education. But in the power of empowering users to do things, we'll also allow you to do things like this, where we will say, you have some options. You could take the person you're sending it to, maybe you sent it to the wrong person. We will allow you to override it, because as an end user, if you have a business requirement for doing this, we allow you to hit the override, you put in a business justification. It still allows you to send that message, but it can then be audited after the fact. And we send the message as well as the audit data so people can check it afterwards and make sure you've done the right thing. But we also do, if I look at this Learn More link, we will tell you what we found, but if you think it got it wrong, you don't think this information is sensitive, please click report. And that's what we call a false positive report. So the system decided that there was something sensitive, you knew better, you send it off, you can still send the email, but the admin's allowed to audit that later. So we're giving the end user power to be able to do things, but we still have the power in the system to do it. So they are policy tips. And way back in our Compliance Centre, because I can't do any of my demos without going back to the fabulous Compliance Centre, this is where you can see, I happen to have set up a financial data policy that you can see is enforced, and I start to get some information from the console without having to go anywhere to say how many overrides there were and how many matches there were and how many false positives there were. Obviously, I haven't used the system enough because I've only got small numbers in there, but they're very easy to manage. And the other thing you'll notice is, as well as the classifications we do, in exchange we've just introduced a thing called fingerprinting, where you can upload a document, typically a form. We will upload that document, analyse it, and then as data is moving through the system, if we find something that matches that form or is close to it, So you may upload your HR form, for example. We can now do things like, hey, that classification matches that fingerprint, and I have a rule which says you can't send HR information outside of the organisation, for example. So this classification system is getting cleverer all the time. Yes? It's using some specific stuff. There's a hashing technology. I'm looking at the GPM that looks after this stuff. If he wants me to say anything else specific. Okay, we can talk about it afterwards. We have someone in the room that can explain it to you. But it's a hash type of thing. But just like looking for the credit cards, this is not a simple algorithm. It is something that's somewhat complex, which means that we're able to detect things and how close they are to the original. So let me flip back to the presentation. And so that's what we do. We talked about the fact that we do content analysis. We talked about the fact, oh, those policy tips, I was showing you those in OWA. They're there in Outlook as well. So it's helping the user wherever they are. And we talked about the document fingerprinting. And then I promised to show you what was happening in SharePoint. SharePoint document classification. So this was something that Michal showed in the keynote. So in SharePoint Online, in the next few months, we're going to introduce 51 built-in classifications. The way this is going to work is that we will use the fast indexing pipeline, so while it's indexing your data, it will actually use those classifications to look for those sensitive classifications, will then mark the index to say, not only does this have this type of data, we're going to add additional information like how many of these are in this document, what our confidence level is. And that then means, from a discovery point of view, I can say things like, find me all the documents that have, in Michal's demo, she said, UK passports in them, or UK passport numbers. I can also say, have queries that say things like, show me all the documents that have more than 5 passport numbers in them, because I'm interested in those. Show me how many have social security numbers and dates of births in them. So you can start to do some very clever things. You can also start to say things like, how many have got credit cards that have a confidence level above a certain number? So you can start to do some very clever analysis to understand the risk within your organisation of how much sensitive data you actually have in SharePoint Online in this case, but this will eventually come to the next version of SharePoint. Yes? So can we use the document? We can't yet. The reason I showed you the Exchange stuff first is eventually we will use similar technology, but the classification engine is the same, which is why we have the 51 built-in classifications. There was a question that someone asked on Twitter after the keynote presentation that says, can I modify those classifications? Can I add my own? You won't be able to do that in the first release. So we're just going to provide the 51 built-in, which covers bunch of different countries, and it covers everything from UK passport numbers to social security numbers to Australian tax file numbers, so it's a range of countries. So that's where we're starting, and then we'll continue on from there. But I promised our GPM I wouldn't say anything about dates. There you go, he's smiling wryly at me. All right, now, to explain how all of that works with eDiscovery, I'm going to invite Quentin up to talk about eDiscovery. Thank you, Quinn.
Thank you, Astrid. So it's time for some sobering facts for a minute. The average Fortune 1000 company has more than 80 legal cases per year dealing with eDiscovery. If you're not familiar with eDiscovery, it's the process of finding, preserving, and processing data that's needed as evidence for legal cases. The average cost per case just for eDiscovery is $1 million. So as you can imagine, eDiscovery is a big concern for any reasonably sized organization out there. Out of all the businesses doing business in the United States, 90% of them are actively involved in some type of lawsuit. Right? Going out and finding gigabytes of data and processing it is difficult. right? You might imagine, hey, we've got Google and we've got Bing, and I can just do a search, go out and find stuff on the internet. Who here thinks that there's something like that in your enterprise where you could just type in some stuff and instantly search everything in the enterprise and find everything you're looking for? Okay, nobody. So it's not easy. It's very hard, and that's why it costs so much money to go out and process that data. Then when you do find what you're looking for, there's a lot of it. And then you have to pay lawyers to go through and read all that content page by page to determine whether it's relevant to your case. And that's why Microsoft is committed to helping you with that problem. In the 2013 release, we launched the eDiscovery Center, which for the first time allowed you to go to one place where you could search across Exchange, SharePoint, and Link, be able to find content, preserve it with in-place hold, and then get it out of the system. So we've brought that into this new compliance center, so you have one place where you can manage your e-discovery. And as we've shown before, I have a case that I've already created in my e-discovery center. In this specific case, I'm going to look for some sensitive information. One of the new things that we've been working on is the ability to search all SharePoint sites. So if you are familiar with our eDiscovery features today, you can select specific SharePoint sites to search, as well as specific mailboxes. Now we have the ability to search all SharePoint sites and all Exchange mailboxes. And so that's what I'm doing here, is I'm using those sensitive information classifications to run a search for sites that have credit card numbers and social security numbers. And I can see I actually have a few hits of sites with that information. So this is a tool that I can use to analyze and get information about what's going on in my organization. So I can build a report from this and do investigations, understand what's going on. I can also get a preview of the results, so I can go in and see what's going on with this information, who's creating it. In this specific case, I can see Garth Fort seems to have a lot of this information, right? And it's in a team site, it's in his My site. So that helps me understand, okay, is Garth on some type of team where he needs to work with this data? Or is he in our sales organization and he shouldn't even actually be sharing any of this information? So this helps me make decisions where I can go and protect my organization. Another thing I can do is then perform an export. So I've created this separate query, and I can just click this export button, and that's going to download the content from SharePoint. And we can, of course, do this across Exchange as well. So this is huge because today the process for a lot of organizations is that they go to a whole bunch of different SharePoint servers, they go to a whole bunch of different SharePoint sites, they manually take this content out. The processes that we've talked with a lot of organizations about, it takes them months in order to accomplish this. So it takes them a lot of time before they can even get access to this data just to put it in another search tool so they can even start finding how much information they have there and get information about what's going on. This allows you to quickly search real-time, up-to-date data, and then with a couple of clicks, just get it out of the system. I'm not going to go in-depth in all the different things we can do with eDiscovery, but immediately after this session, I'll be presenting the end-to-end eDiscovery session, and I welcome you to attend that, where I'll dive deeper into all the different capabilities. We also have a session from the Microsoft legal team where they will be talking about how we do eDiscovery at Microsoft. Question over here. So the question was, how do we deal with encrypted content? And that's a great question. So we can search across content that is Microsoft encrypted. So if it has SharePoint IRM, or if it has RMS protection in Exchange, we're able to search on that data. If it has some other type of encryption where we weren't able to index it properly, we mark that, and we're able to export that out. So you have that all in a separate folder so you could process that information. So that way you make sure you get all that data. Now when we export the data, it will still be encrypted. And so that's one of the challenges that we have today, is that you'll have to have a tool to go in and be able to break that encryption. So come to the other eDiscovery sessions we have to learn more. I'd also like to point out that there's an overview of spreadsheet compliance management session on Thursday at 9, where we'll be discussing how to manage compliance on high-risk spreadsheets that may have important financial information. As you can imagine, someone goes in and makes a change to one of those financial calculations that means we should go trade $1 billion on something versus $1 million. Right? You want to keep track and manage that, and there's regulations around that. So that's what they'll be talking about Thursday at 9. So I'll turn it back over to the rock star of retention, Astrid.
Thank you, Quentin. Okay. Back to the PowerPoint. That was the demo. All right, you found all your data. What's the last thing you want to do? You want to audit it. Who looked at the data? Who edited the data? What happened to it? Now, there's a lot of stuff on that screen, so I'm actually going to jump over to the demo machine because we love demos. I'm going to switch to Firefox. Why do I need to switch to Firefox? Because I need to connect to a different demo tenant, and I can't do it in IE, and it all gets confused. So what we're using here is, in fact, the same tenant we used for the keynote session. So here's my compliance center. Looks the same no matter which tenant I'm in. I go into auditing and I can see all my site collections. And I'm going to go into this one and go into audit settings. And it'll think about it for a little bit. Now, there are many things that we have in the cloud that we don't have in the on-premises servers. There is one or two things that we have in on-premises servers that we don't have in the cloud. And one of the things that we didn't have in the cloud up to now was view-only auditing. Show me who viewed my documents. We could only show you editing. This is coming to SharePoint Online. So you'll finally be able to do the view-only auditing, and that was something they showed in the keynote session. So that's a real tick box in a real online environment that says, hey, we can look at online who looked at data. So the other thing I'll show you, and here I'll have a bit of a confession to make, I can jump directly to my audit reports. Now, what happened in the keynote demo is Mikhail kicked on this, and she clicked on something, and then mysteriously, something a bit like this showed up. We said, hey, we've got this great new audit report. This is not exactly live. This is actually a concept. This is something we're working on in terms of getting more auditing data, but I do have to confess it wasn't actually live in the keynote, and I can tell you that now that we're after the fact. But we're very focused on making sure that we get very comprehensive audit data for SharePoint. In fact, for all of the products, because we know how important auditing is. And as part of the information protection team, we have a team that's actually looking at auditing across all of our products. And so that's one of their focus areas, is looking at this. The other thing I wanted to show you was something that's in Exchange that we've introduced. And again, it's something we've introduced in Exchange that will eventually come to SharePoint. And these are all the, you can do lots of audit reports in Exchange as well, but it's this one down the bottom that I want to draw your attention to that's new. This has actually been already delivered online. And this is View Data Center Admin Audit Logs. So for anyone that's concerned about putting their data in the cloud and says, who from a Microsoft data center operations point of view is touching my data? We now audit it. You can run reports. So if you come to us and say, hey, you need to fix this mailbox or you need to move this mailbox, you can see exactly what commands we run And you can see exactly what any of the data center people have done. And we will eventually be bringing this to SharePoint as well. But we're trying to be as transparent as possible to say, this is what's happening with your data, and you can see who's touching it and who's not. So that we've seen as a big ask from people as well. Yes? Is this available on 2013 on-prem? No, because it's not required. So all of these reports, so the question was, is this available in on-prem? The data center operations report is unique to online because we're talking about Microsoft data center operations and what they're doing to your data. On-prem, you can see what we already have auditing for what the admins do in your own environment. Okay?
How about the view part?
The earlier feature that I meant, the view-only auditing? That's another one that's been available. So the question was, is the view-only auditing available on-prem? That's been available in the on-premises products for a very long time. It was one of the gaps we had in the online product. And it's effectively because view-only auditing generates a lot of data, which means we have to store a lot of data. So it took us a while to figure out what we needed to store and what we didn't need to store to give people an efficient way of doing that. Okay? Now, there was a question you wanted for me to show the auditing. Did you have a particular query about the auditing, or did you just want to see the links again? So what we've done, so the question was, can we include screen prints of the demos themselves so people can download them? We don't have screen prints of all of the demos, but what you may have seen throughout the presentation is we actually had a screenshot of the homepage of every one of those areas. So there's a homepage of the auditing. I just didn't go through them on the screen. So most of those screens you will, in fact, see. Yeah, so that's already in the presentation itself. Yes. See, now, this is where I get to say I'm not in the marketing department anymore. I'm just a mere program manager. So we'll take that question offline because the licensing question is different for different users. But generally speaking, we try and make most of our features available to all of the tenants. There will be some, for example, in-placehold is one that is a premium feature, which is for enterprise customers. But if you've got specific questions, come up and talk to us afterwards and we can talk about it. Yes? So the adding of security permissions isn't something that our team does, but that does get logged. I don't know if it actually logs what they sent. I'm looking at Kamal, who's trying to tell me something.
I think that's actually great feedback for us. What kind of file service it is.
Ah, yes. So.
Yeah,
Yeah. Yeah, and so the feedback was, if there are other things that we're not currently auditing, like the example was someone, you know, sets external sharing permissions and then they send data out, we want to know what the data is sent out, that is excellent feedback for us to try and figure out both what we need to audit and what we need to get our partners in SharePoint to audit for us so that we can give you a complete auditing story. So we welcome that feedback. Yes? So the question was, you're not seeing audit reports for when somebody opens a document library in Explorer View and uses WebDAV, and effectively that information is not being audited?
Correct. There's no way to disable that either. There's no way to disable View as Explorer.
Oh, you can't turn off View as Explorer mode.
Yeah.
And so we have one person in the center of the room looking at you going, we might need to take that question offline to check that to see. Yes.
Yeah.
So that. So this is what we call real-time troubleshooting. So the answer that Sarah gave, who's our program manager lead for auditing, was that our new auditing infrastructure is effectively at the database level, so we should be capturing everything, but that's where we get to connect customer to product team to see whether we've got a missing bug there, because we certainly should be able to capture that. Yes? Yes.
Could you tell something more about the reporting?
It looks much better than the Excel reports. Really? So the question was, hey, we don't get reports that look like they're good today, is effectively the question. We are working on it. We know that the Excel reports are difficult to read. So as part of finding, you know, getting the right information to reports, we're looking at what the right reporting infrastructure and giving you a better way to review the reports. But again, if you have requirements where you'd like to see it in a particular format because you want to use it. Yeah. So there you go. The feedback is that they'd really like them to be readable. And so this, like I said, this was actually a prototype for what we expect some of the reports to look like. So it sounds like that this we're on the right track for the sorts of formats that we're looking at. Okay. Great. Okay. Right, and I have one more last piece of the puzzle. So we've talked about all of those things. So thank you, you've been patient with me. We talked about auditing and archive and discovery and encryption and DLP and preservation and delete. But the one thing about unified compliance, it's not only putting the management in one place. What we're hearing from customers, give me one experience and make it very easy to manage. So the next step that we're looking at taking is not only bringing everything together, but starting to manage compliance in a very unified way. And by that I mean we don't manage the compliance in the individual workloads. We manage it actually in the compliance center itself so that you have a single policy that can go across all of the products and then be sent down to the workloads. And you manage it in one place and we effectively abstract it from the workload so that we can actually do some clever things like consistent policies across the workloads instead of having you figure out how that works. And the first part of that that we're going to deliver, and this will be coming along with the compliance center in a few months. So I'll switch back to my demo machine. Back to the friendly land of IE. And so I showed you this hold screen and I kind of ignored most of the things that were in it because I said I'd come back to it. And this is what we call our unified hold policies. And what you'll see here is a set of policies, and I'm going to create a new one. It says, I want to create an in-place hold policy, put data in my organization on hold. Not that, but I don't have to go to SharePoint and do that particular site, and I don't have to go to Exchange and do that particular mailbox. Here I create the one policy, and I'm going to create my SPC policy, and I can give it a description. And it says to me, what do you want to look for? So all of that goodness of the query that we had in the e-discovery and the time-based hold is still here. So I can say, okay, anything that's about SPC and disclosure. And I really want to target down the information that I want to hold. And so I'm going to say, hey, only look for data that was created in the last month because I'm really only interested in stuff that was created in the last month. And I want to search across mailboxes and sites. This is fine. Tell me which mailboxes you'd like. So because Quentin and I have been working on this and we may have accidentally created something that disclosed something that someone's going to have to find out later, eventually when it comes up with my mailboxes, mice need to run faster today. They were obviously out partying last night as well. So I'm going to pick our two mailboxes. And it says, hey, which sites would you like to put in on hold? And I happen to know that there is a... Oops, that's not the right URL. I'll take that URL. Because here's one I've created earlier. And it's going to go out to SharePoint and make sure that that's a valid URL. So it'll take a little bit to come back and say, hey, that's a valid one. So it'll look in that site. And then I can say, but how long do you want me to put this stuff on hold? It now gives me that choice. It combines what you saw in the eDiscovery Center and the individual time-based hold policies. It says I can either put it on hold indefinitely. I've got some predefined, you know, kind of periods of time. Or you know exactly how long you want to put it on hold. It's, hey, I want to put it on hold for 60 days. And yes, I want to turn on this policy. And it gives me a summary so I can see exactly what I'm about to do when I have two mailboxes on one site, and this is how long I'm going to hold it for. And then it's going to go and save that policy, and it'll send it out to Exchange, and it'll send it out to SharePoint, and it'll put all the right things on hold, and eventually it'll come back and say everything was good. And so in this way, we're not asking you to go out to two separate places to manage things. You're able to manage your policies in a single location. You're able to start to set compliance across all of your data stores. And you can imagine we had mailboxes and sites in there. It would be not too far a stretch to say, hey, we want other data sources in there. And we're creating an infrastructure that allows us to add additional sources and let you to manage your compliance in a single location. Yes, there was a question.
With these policies that are being created, is there a way to receive a policy expiration notification?
The question was, is there a way to receive a policy expiration notification? Help me understand the question.
I'm on the hold manager and I created this policy.
Yeah.
Put things on hold.
Yep.
And this hold is going to expire on a specific day. Is there a way I can receive a notification?
So the question was, do I get notification when the hold expires? The hold doesn't actually expire, so the time period is not for the life of the policy itself. It's for the time period of the document or the item in the mailbox. So when I put something on hold for a month, it says that every item for the month from it was when it was created for 30 days. Anytime it gets, you know, if it gets deleted, I will preserve it in that period of time. Once it's older than 30 days, I don't worry about it. So in this case, there's not an expiration on the policy itself. Okay? Yes? Yes, we are planning to put that in the on-premises versions when the next release of those on-premises versions comes out. That's absolutely our intention. Yes? I love that question. And that is one of the things that we would like feedback on. So you'll notice we've only got the archiving mailboxes there, not the record center. The challenge we have today is we need to understand what it is that people want to do, because setting up a record center isn't enough, because you need to set up a record center and there's a number of things you need to do in order to make records management useful. And today we don't have a single place to do those. And in fact, we don't even have a way to have links to a single place. So that's absolutely an area we're looking for feedback in that says, these are the typical tasks I want to do. Help me make them easy for you. And we now have a location that we can start to put those things in. Okay? Yes? Yes. So for things like, so the question was, I showed something earlier that said we could bring in link data, and you know, we'd like to bring in things like Bloomberg data into the system. Is there a way we can do that today? So link data, we've already solved that problem. We provide a way for you to archive link data into Exchange. So link has already been solved for both on-premises and for the cloud. But things like Bloomberg data and those sort of things, that's actually aspirational for us. So that was kind of more roadmap than anything else. We are working on what those right solutions are and what are the best ways to bring that data in. So there's not existing ones for those. So for our third-party archives, you need third-party tools to bring them in. We do have some things. We have a PST ingestion tool to allow you to bring PSTs into archives. But that's, we don't have a broad story for that yet. So it's mainly third parties today. So the question was, do we have any monitoring capabilities that effectively allow you to do sampling? Yeah, so if you want to, you know, just look at 2% of the communication and those sort of things. I'm getting a nod from over here that says it is on our roadmap. We do a little bit of that for eDiscovery today, which allows you to do some sampling. And so I guess the question back to you is, I assume you're looking for that for more than eDiscovery. You're looking for that across the compliance tools?
Yeah.
Yeah. So we, like I said, we do have some sampling capabilities from a discovery point of view, but that's good feedback that says, hey, we want that in a broader area. There's a question right behind you as well, gentleman in the red shirt.
Yeah, just a couple of user experience questions.
Sure.
In the demo that obviously wasn't live, it seemed that you were having to jump from the results that you were seeing on the discovery side to finding the audit afterwards. There's no pantype system for writing things.
So the only thing that I kind of faked there. Oh, sorry. The question was, I jumped to an auditing report, which was effectively a mocked-up auditing report. Will there be a direct way to get there? The answer is absolutely. When we came in here and said, hey, you can do this today, I can look at the audit report and I can click on here and it says, hey, I'm going to run an audit report and you give it a saved location. It just happens to give you an Excel spreadsheet. I clicked to a mock-up because we didn't want to show you the Excel spreadsheet because, as someone pointed out, it's not very pretty. So, yes, you will absolutely, in that same link that says view the auditing reports, that will be the way, we'll give you some way to say, hey, go directly to the auditing reports.
From an e-discovery
result was the question. Okay, can we go directly from auditing to e-discovery? We actually don't have that capability today. That's one of the things that we are working on from that unified compliance point of view. You saw me have to pick mailboxes and pick sites. What we're working on is a way to incorporate the eDiscovery search capabilities, and then once you have search results, to take actions on it. So we are looking at ways that we can incorporate both of those things together to give you what you want. But we don't have a time frame or a roadmap for doing that right now. Yes? All right, so I'm going to reverse that question and answer the second one first, that says when you set up the Discovery Center or when you set up eDiscovery, do you need to give people permissions in the individual sites or can you just do it in one place? Today you need to give them permissions in both places. As we evolve this forward, our vision is that you only give them permissions in the Compliance Center and that will give them the right permissions that they need to do in the workloads. Your first question was, if I set a hold policy centrally, what happens if I tweak the individual settings in the sites of the mailboxes? In our first version of that, we won't necessarily detect that, but that's on our roadmap to make sure that we incorporate those sort of changes. Now, we are starting to get to the end of the time, so I did want to say thank you and just sum up and say, hey, we talked about empowering the user and giving them the right level of controls and the user education. The compliance officer giving them the right tools to do everything they need in one place, making it easy for IT, and then under all of that, making it in place and extensible. So that's our vision for compliance tools. Don't forget to evaluate the session. We are looking for feedback, and we do actually take the feedback very seriously. So I have a Twitter account, AstridMCC. If you want to send me something directly, you can put it on Yammer, which is where we're collecting all of the information from the sessions. Certainly welcome your feedback. I will be here after the session. I will be in the kiosk at the expo thing. There's a Microsoft section in the middle, and we have a governance and compliance area. So I'll be there this afternoon. I'll be there tomorrow afternoon after my session. Quentin will be there. There'll be a number of people there. So we welcome your feedback, and thank you very much.